This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. Later in the hour, we'll take a look at America's big drug companies. Are they more interested in cures or profits? But first, a look inside the brain to where memories are made. You know, one of the unsolved mysteries of our minds is what happens? What happens when you learn something committed to your long-term memory? What's going on in your brain? Scientists know that there are changes in the synapses, the region between the nerve cells in your brain. But exactly what those changes, well, we're not quite clear about that. This week, a team of researchers led by Michael Ehlers at Duke University and Julie Cower at Brown supplied another piece of the puzzle. They found out where an important molecule, one that is used in long-term memory formation, where that molecule lives in the body. Joining me now to talk more about the research and how it might help people suffering from memory disorder is Dr. Cower. She's an associate professor in the Department of Molecular Pharmacology, Physiology, and Biotechnology, and in the Department of Neurology at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. Thanks for talking with us today, Dr. Cower.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Let's talk about, tell us first of all, what scientists know about the formation of memories and what is happening in the brain.
Okay, well, I'll give you a little background. We've known for about 50 years or so that the hippocampus is a part of the brain that's necessary for the formation of new long-term memories. So if you had damage here, you would retain your old long-term memories intact, but you would lose the ability to make any new long-term memories. And for many years now, the tools that scientists have been able to use to look at this question have gotten better and better and more specific. And at this point, we've started to be able to really understand the cellular basis of what's happening and even getting into what molecules are involved. So what we think, if we sort of take a microscope and look down through it at a couple of brain cells, the synapse between them, as you were mentioning, is that the presynaptic cell is a signaling cell that sends out a signal, the neurotransmitter, across the synaptic gap, and then it has to bind to receptors on the postsynaptic or detecting cell. And this receiving cell then sort of hears that information and allows it to then go ahead and pass information further along. And this is how neurotransmission occurs in the brain. What we think is that the receptors, these detectors of transmitters, are increased during long-term memory. Extra receptors seem to appear on the cell surface at the synapse, and therefore increase the synapse so that the signal that was sent from that first neuron is now heard more loudly. And this process is called long-term potentiation, or LTP, and it's been studied for about 30 years now.
Mm-hmm. And what have you discovered in your research?
Well, what we found was that one of the big mysteries that remains to be answered was where those receptors were coming from, those extra receptors.
Right.
And I want to thank my incredibly talented colleague, Michael Ehlers, who just came up with this hypothesis and with whom I was able to test it, that a compartment inside cells, inside that postsynaptic cell, which is called the recycling endosome, acts as a storehouse for this receptor. And to test this hypothesis, we introduced mutant proteins to interfere with the transport of the receptors from this storehouse, this particular storehouse, to the synaptic membrane. And this is something that this sort of trafficking of different cargos around the cell, if you will, occurs with all sorts of different proteins in the cell. And there were different compartments from which these important receptors might be coming. But Mike sort of targeted this recycling endosome, and we found mutant proteins that specifically interfere with the function of chaperone proteins, whose specific job is to carry cargo from that endosome to the surface membrane. And when we introduced these mutant proteins into the cells, we found that that completely blocked the delivery of these receptors and, in fact, also blocked our ability to produce long-term potentiation in brain synapses.
So you blocked the memory formation.
By extrapolation, we would have blocked the memory formation, exactly.
So basically, you have found the little box inside the cell where the receptors live?
That's exactly right.
And then they supposedly go out of this box, and then they go to the ends of the nerve cell and then receive the signals coming across.
That's right.
Synapse.
And now there are more of them, and so they receive that signal louder.
More and
bigger
more.
Bigger signal.
More and more and more of them.
That's right.
Is this box that holds the receptors, is it unique just to nerve cells?
No, actually, these compartments are present in all cells, and it's one of the most fascinating things, how the nervous system carrying out this incredibly specific and fascinating function has kind of usurped this function for this very important mechanism that's necessary for the formation of memory, we believe.
Yeah.
We also made another surprising finding I'd like to mention, which is that it's been known for a long time that as a result of learning, synapses physically change. They actually grow larger.
Right.
And one of the things that we found, in fact, Mick Young Park, the grad student who did this work in Mike's lab, found was that the chaperone proteins that normally carry these extra receptors we've been talking about also carry bits of recycled membrane and other proteins back to the cell surface when long-term potentiation is initiated. So we think that during memory formation, this is a mechanism that could also be used to increase the size of the synapse and strengthen it.
Interesting. Talking with Julie Cower this hour in Talk of the Nation Science Friday, if you'd like to talk with us about memory formation, our number is 1-800-989-8255. So how do you lose memory then? Do the receptors go away from the site?
Yes, there's actually evidence that a cognate process called long-term depression, which uses many of the same mechanisms, actually, to long-term potentiation, occurs, and that receptors actually do get taken back up into the cell. And one of the really interesting questions that our work raises is exactly where these receptors go. It's clear that there's recycling going on all the time of receptors from the surface, being taken in, coming to the compartment that I was just discussing, the storage compartment, and they can also be shuttled to other compartments in the cell. And so how all this reaches stability is one of the questions that we have remaining to us.
Yeah, memory is a fascinating question, isn't it?
I think it's one of the things that makes us human. It's one of the most interesting things in neurobiology today.
You know, we had Dr. Eric Kandel on a few months ago.
Yes,
talking about learning and memory. And he, you know, he's been doing this for 30 years or so, or at least. And he said that learning and memory involves turning on genes in the cell that promote these new synaptic connections. Does that fit into your theory here?
Well, certainly that's the case, and we believe that. Our work shows something else, I think. I think we're looking at a very early process. You know that when you learn something, you can learn it instantly. You can know it, and
right.
You can. The memory begins immediately. So always in the search for memory, and Dr. Kandel's work is no exception to this, we've all been looking for something that can happen very quickly as it has to happen to make that work. And so what I have to say, our work focuses in on the very early changes that probably take place in the first few seconds to hours, whereas some of the genetic changes and changes in what you might think of as really longer-term processes that have to follow on from that certainly are likely to involve genetic changes. And that I think that's kind of where his work sort of also follows up on.
Mm-hmm. Can you use this knowledge about this receptor box that you have in the cell now to help treat people with memory disorders, possibly?
Well, I think you know, this is very basic science research, and so precisely what we've found here doesn't translate immediately into a clinical setting. But I think the way to think about it is, and this is how all basic research, I think, contributes to medical science and human health, is that without knowing the specific molecular targets that are present in any process, in the process of memory formation, for example, you can't really try to design therapies that would be effective. And the more we learn, now that we've identified, for example, these chaperone proteins, we now have new targets that we know are probably involved in memory formation. We can look in the literature and see whether or not there are specific disease states that may be associated with problems in those particular proteins. We can also look at drugs or perhaps even target drugs to try to deal with some of these issues in that way. And I think our work in that sense is one piece of a puzzle, and we need to build up the entire puzzle in order to really have a very good handle on how to manipulate the system in those ways.
Mm-hmm. And so where do you go from here in your research?
Well, I myself, in collaboration with Mike, are very interested in continuing work at the basic level. As I said, I think building up the pieces of this puzzle is a really important thing, and there are many reasons for that. One is one of the things that's been difficult in trying to study the brain is trying to link changes in neural circuits to specific behaviors. So we can study an animal's behavior and say, aha, it must have learned something.
Right.
But to know exactly which neural circuit underlies that, which part of the hippocampus changed when that occurred, is really difficult. If we have some kind of molecular signature that it's occurred, I think that gives us a real handle on it.
If you have the same box of receptors in every cell in the body, could they be doing sort of the same thing for the other cells but not, you know, not remembering things? I mean, I mean, what are they doing in the other cells?
Well, I may have misled you when I said that. It's a little simple to think of it that way. This compartment and the chaperone proteins that move things around may be very similar from cell to cell. These receptors are certainly not present in every cell in the body. They're only present in certain neurons in the brain. So they are specific in that way. But the whole process of handling cargo around cells is handled in this way, movement from one storehouse to another or one storehouse to the plasma membrane of the cell. So that's a good thing in a way, because we can take advantage of it in our experiments, and also our brains are obviously taking advantage of it. Mm-hmm. But it's also, it is specific based on what cargo any given cell has to use for its specific function.
So you couldn't just infuse, if you wanted to, make people remember things better, you just couldn't infuse the brain with more of these receptors, artificially make receptors and let them flow around and...
They have to be inserted very specifically. I think actually the approach that one would want to use instead of that one would be to manipulate the machinery that's necessary to traffic them around or to improve the levels of their levels in the cell. And that's going to involve understanding all the regulatory elements, some of which we've identified here. I think just pouring receptors in there, these are proteins that will not go to the right place if you just pour them into the system. So it needs to be a little more detailed than that. And I think, again, that's one reason why this basic research really helps us out in trying to control the system a little bit.
Let's see if we can take a phone call in before we have to go. Let's go to Matt in Syracuse. Hi, Matt.
Hi.
Hi.
Great show. Listen, doctor, I've got a quick question. What happens when you remember something or you learn it and then forget it? And then, like, maybe when you go somewhere and you haven't been there in a long, long time, and you go back to that place and you forgot totally what the place was, and then it comes back, you say, oh, yes, I remember this now. Everything is exactly the way I remember. What
deja vu all over again.
Situation? Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting question, and I'm not sure that I know the answer to that question. We've all experienced that, and I think that we need to think about memory as having several components. The hippocampus is involved in making new long-term memories, and as I said before, your really long-term memories, you know, the home that you grew up in when you were a child, things that maybe you haven't experienced for a long time, they're in there, and they're stored, and they're not stored in the hippocampus. And it isn't exactly clear how memories move from the hippocampus where they're originally formed to these other regions where they're stored for longer periods. But probably there are connections between sensory input, like you seeing that house again, and those long-term memories that sort of bring back, oh, yes, I remember the day that I dropped my candy on the sidewalk or whatever happened. And it may be that strengthening those connections again or reusing those connections after a long time may sort of reignite a small circuit that's present. But I don't believe that's occurring in the hippocampus proper. I think that's probably in a different part of the brain. So that's as much as I can do.
That's interesting. Well, at some point then we decide to move it out of the hippocampus.
That's exactly right.
To another spot.
Yes, it seems to be the case.
Huh, maybe something happens in the transfer.
That might well be. That might well
I mean,
be.
You know, maybe gets lost in the routing circuit. You need a little FedEx number to find out where it's gone.
That might very well be true. And I think the more you use those routing circuits, the more maintained they become. And I think that this process of long-term potentiation that we're studying probably has implications for that process as well. I think this would give you a great mechanism for strengthening connections that are used in other parts of the brain as well.
Well, Dr. Carr, I want to thank you very much for taking time to talk with us. Fascinating.
Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Okay.
Julie Cowers, an associate professor in the Department of Molecular Pharmacology, Physiology, and Biotechnology. It must be a big department. And the Department of Neurology at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. We're going to take a short break, change gears, and come back and talk about pharmaceutical companies and how they do business, and a new book that's out that really is very critical of the way the pharmaceutical industry is run these days. Stay with us. We'll be right back.